Well, Mom, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dan. My darling son.
I know, right? Oh, man. Yeah, so this is, it's weird having your mom on the on a podcast like this.
Yes. You know?
So, but as I think about people who love well, like, there are people from, you know, Metro Detroit to Baltimore, Maryland, who know you simply as Mimi.
Yes.
And
yes.
Not just your blood relatives.
Right.
So, so for those people who don't know you, give them a little thumbnail sketch of, you know, you served as a teacher and you are still doing lots within the community, at least, I mean, as much as you can in the midst of the pandemic, but pre-pandemic, I mean, even though you were retired, I mean, you were still super involved in your community and beyond. So kind of give folks just a snapshot.
A snapshot for those that don't know me. Well, I'm Dan's mama. but have two other boys. And Dave is in Waterford. Jay is out in Maryland. I taught in, well, I started my teaching career before children in Clarkston.
Yep.
For 3 years. Got my tenure, and then it was baby time. and about, I don't know, 11, 12 years later, went back to work. So had to get recertified and all of that. And Pontiac happened to be hiring at the time, and my cousin Sally worked there, and she was got me into the district with a long-term sub job. And from there, I was in Pontiac for another 27 plus years.
Wow.
And
which is interesting to think about. Like, we're in a time now where districts are hurting for teachers.
Correct.
Are dying for teachers. Back then, it was like, in Michigan especially, to get a teacher's job was...
It was tough.
It was very competitive.
Yeah.
You really did have to know somebody to get in.
Right.
So...
Because actually, I went back to Clarkston and re-interviewed with the powers that be, in a man that knew me, knew my... had worked with your grandfather. And his statement was, well, Missy, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And so I kind of, okay, whatever that meant.
Yeah.
But, no, I was very fortunate. And I will probably say this several times, God put the right people in my path. I was in the same building with my cousin Sally and at Elcott, and the principal there, Mr. Robbins, helped. I mean, a job did open up, and he and the gal at the board office, I think her name was Dombrowski, not that that matters, but they held the position for me until we could get all of my paperwork squared away, and they were very proactive contacting the state and helping me with that. So, you know, when you stop and look back at different situations and, you know, think about those people, God was right there.
Yeah.
And so... Anyhow, from there, I moved to a couple of different schools, because that's where the jobs were. Right. I was low man on the totem pole, so if a position was taken out of a building, I was low man, so I would be moved to a building where there was openings.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate that I got transferred to Longfellow Elementary, where I spent the greatest portion of my time, about 19 years, I think. Mm. But it was, I loved it, and still get together with all those gals and guys, and probably nearly every time we get together, the conversation comes back to, if Longfellow was still open, we'd still be teaching.
Mm.
Because the people and the administration, we were family.
Yeah.
And took care of each other in a lot of pretty tough situations.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, frankly, I was blessed with three great kids.
Mm.
That, I mean, we weren't without our struggles from time to time as a family, but you guys were pretty awesome.
Yeah, at least one of us.
Yeah. And, you know, so my time at, I went to college, got my undergrad at Central, and got my master's, got a couple master's classes at Michigan State, but then got master's plus 30 through Oakland University. And again, at that time, we financially was a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, Pontiac Schools and Oakland University, if you had student teachers, we didn't get paid for having a student teacher, but we got college classes.
Yeah.
And
which is a pretty good trade-off because...
Oh, huge.
You have to have continuing ed, right? As a...
Well, at that time, we did not.
Okay.
But, yeah. And I don't know that that is still something.
Yeah, yeah.
Longfellow was a professional development school with the School of Education, and that was all tied up among that. But Pontiac Schools would, through our union, we had a pot of money, just a big
right.
pot of money. And when you finished a class, you could turn in your grades. And they, however many people turned in their work, their paperwork, they would divide that pot of money so that generally you got 40-50% back on your class.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, yeah, it really was. So as frustrated as I got at by the end with Pontiac Schools, I mean, it was, for a very long time, a great place to work.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I digress. And so I worked there, retired in 2012, and it was at a time where the district was going downhill, and when they say, you know when it's time to retire, you know when it's time to retire. Mm. And financially, probably 2 years too soon, but emotionally and health-wise, it was time to go.
Right.
And so, you know, then what else? Oh, I'm very active in my church in Pontiac, First Presbyterian Church, and deacon, and did a stint as a elder. Yeah, no. That was not my cup of tea. Much better at being an elder. And the church, its vision has come around to, for several years, very missional.
Yeah.
Local missions. the church has always supported me when I came to them with anything for Pontiac schools. School supplies, uniforms, coats, I mean, anything related.
Volunteers.
Anything school related. Yeah. They, I mean, we did an after-school program where people, there were four or five, and this is not a large church anymore, so four or five people, you think, oh, well, that's not a lot, but it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're a very aging church. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the younger ones, so that tells you something. But I grew up in the church, was married in the church. My parents were married in the church. My aunts and uncles were married in the church. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a family church.
Right.
And the men of the church were influential with you boys. Mm-hmm. And lots of different ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's where my heart is.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, that's, and still I go back to Pontiac schools and volunteer a couple days a week when we could.
But. So Pontiac is not a easy place.
No, it is not.
It's, I mean, you know, it's
inner city.
It's tough.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, what was it? Because, I mean, outside of a pretty small handful of kids and experiences that I can remember, I mean, you loved serving there. You loved, you loved the city. So what is it? Like, why did Pontiac get into your soul? Like, what is it about that place?
The children. I get emotional. Sorry.
You don't need to apologize.
They deserved children, period. But the Pontiac kids, inner city kids, many of them, their life experiences are something you and I will never, ever, hopefully, ever live through. Their normal would scare the bejesus out of most of us.
Mm-hmm.
When a child writes in their journal in the morning, I feel good this morning. I didn't have to get under my bed last night because there were no guns being shot. Mm. A 7-year-old is writing this. That's their norm. You're sitting in the morning circle and child has an opportunity to share their news. Oh, I got to go see my dad. And I talked to him, and now you can't see me, but I'm on the phone. I talked to him at the jail. I got to see him this weekend. Mm. That's their, and it's, they talk like we're saying, oh, I got to, you know, go to Kalamazoo to see my grandma.
Right.
And that should be no child's normal.
Yeah.
And there were far too many of my children who that was their normal.
Mm-hmm.
And they were tough. They were resilient. They were loving. They had hearts of gold. They were eager to have a place to come every day that they knew would be the same. They knew every day was a new day. I wanted to provide that for them. There were so many I could have brought home and just added to our mix. There was that child you wanted to bring home and just flat out give them a bath. And most children were so grateful for what you provided for them.
Yeah.
You know, the daily snacks, morning and afternoon. Because lots of times when they left school, they didn't eat again until the next morning. And sometimes didn't eat again until next morning's snack, until the breakfast programs started. Right. And now, of course, that isn't an issue. They wanted, in my estimation, they wanted to have a routine. They loved that routine. I wanted to provide that for them. Because I needed a routine.
Right, right.
I mean, even in, you know, everyday life, I need a routine. And they needed that. I loved being able to provide that for them. They just get into your soul. It's just, even the toughest of the toughest kids. I tell the story about James, and
James, he
was a street kid. His dad was in prison. I never found out where mom was. Grandma was raising him. Talked to grandma a couple times a week, usually. But James was a kid. He looked like a street kid. He was square. He was built like a brick house. And some days, I think his whole purpose was to get a rise out of me. But he was smart, very academically smart, street smart. And he was just a kid you had to love. You know, I couldn't help but loving him. And he knew it. Because up until towards the end, you could hug kids. You just hugged kids. And there was no worry with all this extraneous other stuff. And, you know, when this big tough kid would come at you with his arms open, you're going to hug him. And, well, anyway, I ran into him a few summers ago, several summers probably now, out in at Great Lakes Crossing, and which is a big mall for anybody who's not a Michigander. And I was sitting in the food court, and big kid starts walking at me, and I thought, oh my gosh. And he says, Miss Rose. I said, yes. He said, I bet you don't know who I am. Oh, I said, oh, James, yes, I do. Because he was just a bigger version of his little self. And he was just beaming. He says, boy, I was a tough kid. And I said, but I loved you anyway. He said, I know you did. And he said, you know, when Jay came to visit, when he was in the Navy and he was in his uniform and I was acting a fool, he got in my face. His face turned all red. I remember that. But Jay fell in love with him too. And sent a hat and stickers and all Navy stuff. And he said, you know, I have all the stuff that Jay sent me. And he said, I I said, so what are you doing? He said, well, I am graduating this year from Mott High School in Waterford, and I played football, and I'm going to community college, but I want to be a some kind of an engineer.
Yeah.
And with that, this other large man walked up. Well, it was his dad out of college. So I finally met his dad, gave me a big old hug. And as, you know, we chatted, as he walked away, he says, oh, Jay, we've got to tell Grandma that we saw Miss Rose. Mm. And he thanked me. He said, you were a big influence. And I said, well, James got into my heart. So, I mean, it's all of those kinds of things. The toughest of the tough.
Yep.
And just last week, downtown Pontiac, meeting up with Pontiac teachers for lunch. I was getting out of my car and a gal rolled down her window. I pulled in next to her vehicle. She said, didn't you teach in Pontiac? And I said, yes. She said, aren't you Miss Rose? I said, yes. She said, do you remember me? I said, no. Said, fill me in. Give me some clues here. She says, well, I'm Lakeisha. I hate to use last names, but she said, I'm 35 now. And I said, oh my gosh. I said, I'm almost 70. She says, no. I said, yeah. She said, well, you haven't aged. And I said, oh, you made my day. But she's running a bar next to the Strand Theater. It's a cocktail bar connected with the theater.
Yeah.
And she says, it's kind of fancy. You and the ladies should come in and have a drink. We'll do that. So she said,
well, now it's on the podcast, so you
yes,
have to.
Yes, I have to. And actually, a couple other friends have already
been
stopped
in there.
By.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just those kinds of things that, you know, when you look back, you think, okay, maybe we did touch a few lives along the way. And, you know, you just can't help but love them.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know... Black, white, purple. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
I'll
never forget the I think you guys were, I think this was at Longfellow. And I think your principal was retiring. And I was working, it might have been
Brian Castle.
Yeah, I think it happened to be the summer right before Amy and I got married, and so I was working out at the dealership selling cars, and he was retiring, and so I brought a
convertible
out, and we did a parade through the neighborhood.
Yes.
And to see the people come out in the neighborhood and cheer for this guy who, you know, when you looked at that guy, I mean, he looked like a guy that belonged on, you know, a country club golf course somewhere, and not in the inner city Pontiac, but he had made this impact that the people in that neighborhood like came out and cheered this guy and celebrated because he had loved their kids so well
and loved the whole family so well and could call people by name.
Yep. I just won't ever forget that.
Yeah.
It was just a...
Yeah. And that was... Even the hardest families supported all of the things that we did at Longfellow.
Yeah.
And we really had very few major troubled kids in school because we were allowed to be imaginative, do different kinds of teaching. Turn a hallway into the ocean.
I remember that too.
Yeah. Blew up a... I don't even remember. I think we bought Visqueen and created a life-size whale in the upper hallway. And, I mean, kids wanted to come to school.
Right.
They didn't want to get in trouble and not be able to take part.
Mm-hmm.
So we were given that ability.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, so, like, know, yeah, because I remember...
But, yes.
And I think one of those things, too, like, your... the Thanksgiving dinner that you would do every year.
Right? Yes.
You know? I mean...
I borrowed that idea from my friend Norma Kaminskis, who was all... She was a bang-up teacher. And a real advocate for family and... Mm-hmm. And we would... I would buy the meat and the drinks and the paper products, and then at the first conference, at fall conference, I would have the parents sign up to bring a side dish.
Yeah.
Whatever their favorite side dish was.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the first year I didn't have macaroni and cheese on the list.
Uh-huh.
And the first parent said, "Well, where's the macaroni and cheese?" I said, "For Thanksgiving?" "Well, yeah. You know, well, there's a cultural thing."
Yeah.
Total cultural thing.
Right.
And I said, "I just never thought about it."
Yeah.
I said, "We'll just add that right
on
there."
That's
right. And those were the first slots that filled up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would have 60, 70 people crammed into that classroom. Everybody sitting mm-hmm. in little chairs. And... It was a lot of work, and every year I'd think, why?
I'm never doing this
why
again.
Why did I do that? Because I would cook two turkeys.
Yeah.
And finally learned, you slice it off the bone and put it in the, and borrowed the big mm-hmm. Roaster.
Right.
From my Aunt Bernie, which she finally ended up just giving to Missy, just keep it. Put that thing to a lot of good use. Green eggs and ham.
That's right.
Cook up in those really good too. But, and then cover it with juice and then, you know, and then you feed the custodians, the office, mm-hmm. you know, everybody. And I always got dibs on the first slice of sweet potato pie.
That's right.
And, there was always a couple of grandmas that sent in sweet potato pie.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But, you know, all of their important people could come. Just mm-hmm. tell me how many.
Yep.
So I've got enough plates and knives and forks for everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, if all you can send in is a can of corn.
That's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, dump all those cans of corn into crock pots. And so that was, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Was in, cover all the tables with, I just used bulletin board paper. But the kids would draw and decorate it for Thanksgiving. And again, I don't know if it was the first year, the first couple of years, we all sat down and one of the kids said, "Miss Rose, aren't we supposed to pray?" And I said, "Sure." You know, you're going through your head. Am I going to lose my job over this? I said, "Yes, I can't start it. But who would like to start it?" Well, every hand in, you know. I said, "Let's go for it. We'll join in when we know what prayer you're using." And, you know, it was great.
So, yeah.
It was great. And I just, it was just because most of the children were churched,
mm-hmm.
whether by a parent or a grandparent or an auntie or, you know,
mm-hmm.
Most of them were churched.
Yeah.
And you could use that more than once. I said, "Now I know you go to church. What would your pastor think of this?" Because the church was very, and still is, very influential
yeah.
in education.
Right.
And, you know, they would, he wouldn't like this. And I said, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you need to think about that.
Yep.
So, you know, and every year somebody would say to me, Miss Rose, do you believe in God? And I'd say, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, it's just all those things. I mean, it's not any one thing.
Right.
It's all of those things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We went, for a while we would do family nights at Longfellow, and we'd serve a meal and have some activity. But the best attended one was where we would serve a spaghetti dinner and load up on buses, and somebody in the community paid for the bus transportation and go to, there's a little theater connected with Cranbrook Museum,
yeah,
all of
the
that.
Cranbrook Institute.
And we would go to the dress rehearsal the night before a play would open.
Mm.
And that was a huge thing. Mm. So we were able to offer some of those kind of cultural things. It's just, this is another one of our stories in the readers. I don't even know if they do readers anymore, but it was, Tabby Cat, but anyway, they had tea. The owner and the cat had tea. And I thought, okay, I collected all those storybook teapots for years.
Right.
So I thought, all right, well, here's a way to use them.
That's right.
So I lugged all those storybook teapots that had the teapot and then the little cups and saucers that matched it. And I would make muffins, and tea was apple juice. I took in tablecloths, real tablecloths, and we covered all the desks with real tablecloths and set up, you know, places, and everyone could, I got permission because we were a uniform school, they could come dressed in kind of dressed up clothes if they wanted to.
Yep.
And we talked, you know, about teas. And I had a little boy, his first name was Henry, and he was a chunky boy. But I had gone down to the lunchroom, and one of the teachers came up to me and said, okay, one of your boys, Henry, was skipping down the hallway towards the bathroom saying, we're having a tea, we're having a tea party. She said, what? So, you know, I had to tell the whole story.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome.
But, you know, it's things, I don't know if teachers are allowed to do things like that anymore.
Mm.
You know? But that's the stuff that keeps kids coming back.
Yeah.
And just, it makes it fun.
Yep.
We had a story about penguins, and so I thought, well, we'll make a penguin colony. So I laid out the big paper on tables.
Yeah.
Kids would lay on the tabletop, because I wasn't getting on my knees for 30. Traced around the kid, made it into a penguin. They take it out in the hallway, color it like whatever penguin they wanted to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's
cut
hilarious.
It out. Hung them all on the wall. We made eggs out of paper mache.
Uh-huh.
So they had, you know,
the
egg at the feet of the... and we had at my last school, Jefferson Whittier, we had an assistant principal who came from, I think he came from a middle school, one of the middle schools after it closed. And he walked in on this, you know, I get kids laying on tabletops. And he looked around and he said, what are you doing? Because, of course, there were kids in the hallway.
Right.
They were,
right. Yeah, they're just everywhere.
They were everywhere.
Yeah.
So I showed it to him, and he just shook his head because this was his first experience with elementary, yeah. and then he runs into this weirdo teacher.
Yeah.
And he says, "You just never quit, do you?" I said, "Well, no. Nope. Why would I?"
That's right.
Oh, so anyway, but that's
awesome. Wasn't it at Jefferson where, like, people were, when the kids were out playing, people were worried about them being outside because of what could happen to them if they were outside playing in the...
Yes.
I mean, it's like...
I had more than one neighbor person call the office because I'm a proponent of recess.
Right.
And it needs to be a morning break and an afternoon break.
Yep.
And at that time, they were taking away recesses.
Right.
And they had trouble finding, like, a recess person.
Right.
Aide.
Yep.
And probably didn't have the funds to pay them.
Right.
And so, you know, I, being of the old school, I said, I'm going to take my kids out for recess. And yeah. if you need information on why it's good for children
right.
here to have a break.
Here are 22 studies that you can read
right,
in free time.
Exactly. And the principal said, no. And, you know, we'd be out there, and a couple of times, a neighbor called the office. There is a teacher out there, or an adult, we don't even know if she's a teacher, with children outside. And so here'd come the principal. And she said, "I thought it was probably you." I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Children need just to be outside yeah. running." She said, "Well, don't stay out too long." She said, "I'm still not sure this is a good idea." I said, "Well, I can tell you this. You will not see my children in your office right? because of poor behavior."
Yeah.
Because they've had an opportunity to blow off some
right.
steam.
Yeah.
And she says, "Well, I'll hold you to that." I said, "Okay, Miss Hall, you hold me to that." And at the end of the school year, she said, "You know, you're right. Never had one of your yep. kids come to my office." I said, "Well, you know, even the executives at GM get a 15-minute break."
That's right.
"Morning and afternoon."
That's right. Funny how that works, isn't it? Oh,
I said, "You
man.
Think these little kids, yeah." I mean, it was a rough neighborhood, but I never had any strangers
yep.
or anything.
No issues.
Yeah. So.
So, all right. So how, I think most people at this point probably can answer this question for you based on what we've been talking about, but how do you define love?
How do I define love? Well, it's so many things, but I would say first you have to love yourself. Hmm. You have to be able to... And I know I'm not supposed to use the word love in a definition, but you have to like yourself.
Yeah.
You have to give yourself grace. And that's not always easy to do.
Right.
We all know that.
Yeah.
And it's real easy to beat yourself up. And I think giving of your time,
mm-hmm.
being available to people, when you say I'm here for you, follow through on that. You have to, you know, if they should call or somebody says, "Susie said you would help me out with this."
Mm-hmm.
You've got to go and help Susie.
Right.
You know, with a smile.
Yeah.
You have to do things with a happy heart, because if you don't feel good about what you're doing in an effort to help somebody else, it comes through.
Yeah.
As, I'm not sure what it, people pick up on the fact that, yeah, you're here.
But you really don't want to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're here, but you're really not. Yeah. And I think just responding with a happy heart is huge. And sometimes doing the hard thing or what's uncomfortable for you because you know that person needs you to do that. Loving isn't always easy.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be quick to forgive ourselves, quick to forgive others, because none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes.
Yep.
We all make big mistakes.
Yeah.
Right there at the top of the list. And try really hard not to hold grudges. Let that stuff go.
Right.
I know at one point after your dad left, I was beating myself up because I was trying to be, you know, superhero mom. And I was just sort of at the end of my wits. And my brother Tim called just out of the blue. How you doing? Well, of course, I fell apart at the seams. It's so awful. The house is dirty. I feel like I'm chasing my tail. Yada, yada, yada.
Right?
And I can't meet everybody's needs. And Tim said, okay. He said, I learned something when I was in rehab. He's a recovering alcoholic. And he said, is it going to matter tomorrow? Will it matter a week from now that you've got dishes in the sink today? Mm. Is it going to be life and death a year from now?
Yeah.
He said, if it's not, let it go.
Mm. And this was before Frozen.
Yeah, this was before Frozen.
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
This is insightful.
Yes, yes. Somebody listened to our conversation.
That's right. I think you should get royalties.
Yeah.
You guys need to get royalties.
But he said, you know, just take a deep breath and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be everything to everybody. And he said, just don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being able to look at that, and I've fallen back on that conversation a whole lot over the years, and because it's part of my mojo, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, you want to fix everything.
Right.
You want everybody to be happy. You don't want to get anybody upset. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being able to look at how Jesus loved everyone, but most especially the people on the fringe.
Yeah.
If you can work at that, we'll never be Jesus, because
right.
he's the only one that's perfect. So
yeah.
But if you can, you know, kind of keep those kinds of things. And I read something once in reference to children, but it also applies to adults. At the end of the day, what did you do today that would make Jesus smile?
Hmm.
Did you reach out to a friend or, you know, loving in that way?
Yeah.
And, you know, there are days where I look and go, Yeah, well, no. No smiles for me.
That's
today.
Right.
But whether it's in relation to other people or in relation to yourself, you know, you try to just do something nice.
Yeah.
It might be a stranger.
Right.
You know, at Aldi, what would make Jesus smile? A left quarter in the cart.
That's right.
You know?
Yep.
And just, I mean, it's the little.
It's the little things.
The little things.
Yeah. So who modeled that for you? Because I am convinced that this way of living is so much more caught than taught.
Oh, absolutely.
So who modeled this for you?
Who modeled this? You know who modeled this. My dear mother.
Another person who is known as Mimi by hundreds.
Hundreds, yeah. she always said, and you know this too, she always said, it's the person who's hardest to love is the one who needs it the most.
Mm-hmm.
And she was real good at that. And, you know, she was somebody people came to just listen. She was somebody who would go and just be with someone. I think about Aunt Ramona, a friend of the family that we called Aunt. And when she was sick, Mom would just go and be.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a calming influence. When I was going back to school and raising you boys, and she would come most often and stay on my nights I had to be at class.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get home and, you know, the homework would be done. The meal had been taken care of and the dishes done and probably a load of wash done.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd probably been there all afternoon.
Uh-huh.
While you kids were still in school. But, you know, she would just a little fairy, my
mm-hmm.
little fairy. And I can remember people saying, doesn't that bother you that she just comes? And some days she would just come and we'd get home and there would be dinner in the oven. Or,
right.
You know, and she would be gone.
Yep.
And she would have dusted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just being there.
Mm-hmm.
She
or opening her apartment.
Oh my gosh.
Her two-bedroom apartment for the four of us. To come and live for however long that was.
I think we were there 6 weeks.
It felt like six months.
I know. It was a long time. But we've been in a hotel. We had a water damage problem at our house. And we had to be out of the house. And we were in... Insurance was paying for hotel rooms,
mm-hmm.
room, and I said, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And, you know, kids were in school, I was working,
mm-hmm.
and called her, Mom, can we come stay with you? Of course.
Yep.
There was no hesitation. There was no question. No.
Right.
No nothing.
Yep.
She opened her door and in we came.
Yep.
In all of our glory.
Our little vagabond selves.
And thank the Lord you were old enough to drive.
Oh, man.
Because you know, there are so many people, but you picked up the slack for a lot of stuff. Growing up, and your brothers and I love you dearly for that.
I caught it.
Yeah, you caught it.
I caught it.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, Mom, and I know it's on a pedestal and all of that. Was she perfect? No. But darn near.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
I mean, yesterday was the anniversary of her death, and so I mean, you know, you just think back even to her funeral.
Right.
I mean, God, I've never been. I mean, the funeral is a blur, but I have two memories from that funeral, and the one of them is just the throngs of people.
Right.
Over those, from visitation to funeral, like.
Right, over those 3 days.
It was just the whole time, like, you'd think it was, you know, Black Friday at Best Buy.
Right.
It just, like, there were.
It was standing room only.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't people who were there for us.
No.
It was people whose lives she had touched and impacted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was.
Right.
It's still the most remarkable thing I think I've ever.
Yep.
I've ever witnessed.
Yes, yeah.
So.
She touched so many lives. I mean, it was, whatever neighborhood I lived in, she was the neighborhood grandma.
Mm-hmm.
My Fox Bay family, friends, you know, it's a rarity that we get together and Mom's name doesn't come up in some fashion.
Right.
And, I mean, oh my gosh. They were, the Fox Bay couples were amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all the stuff that everybody did, I think, and, you know, my dad, too, he was a high school counselor, and he touched many, many lives. Again, the funeral was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But we had really, I mean, again, our family wasn't perfect, but we had lots of good memories. We didn't have much, but what we had, we shared, and grew up in a neighborhood where everybody shared, that old-fashioned, and I see that a lot in all three of your neighborhoods that you boys live in now, which is so fun to watch. But, yeah, Mom was really good at touching lives.
And
she would come into my classroom, and she always picked out the toughest kid. little boy at LeBaron, where I taught first grade, Bobby. And
I remember Bobby. I remember Bobby stories.
Yeah, he, a little white boy. He wasn't little. He was another sturdy boy.
Yeah.
But lived a horrific life and was angry. Most of the time, he was angry.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He would be locked out of the house. He would. Mother was a drug addict. Many times, came in dirty and without a lot of sleep and hungry. And, you know, it just.
Yeah.
It would take your breath away.
Yeah.
And Child Family Services were involved with that family. And it was a tough go. But Mom, that was the classroom where I had a lot of tough kids. I had a little girl who had been sexually abused at 2.5. Mm. I mean, it was just, oh my goodness.
It was one of those years.
Yeah. And I mean, I might have had 5 kids. I had a little boy named Ryan who was the light in the day. And his mother was a light in the day. But mom would come in and she would sit with Bobby and just lay her hand, pat his back or rub his back or just pat his arm. Mm. Or just be there, and pretty soon he was leaning into her. You know, just again, there wasn't, "Now, honey, why are you doing that? Why?" You know, she was just there.
Just there.
And, yeah, I was going to say that was the class that I bought a fishbowl to put on every group of desks with a goldfish or beta or whatever in it, because watching a fish swim around
calms you.
Is very calming. And, but, you know, she would come in and do things like that. Yes, she was the guiding light.
Yep.
And I've had many people along the way in different situations where I've looked at them and thought, I want to be like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I wanna do those kinds of things.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So loving is...
So how do you keep doing it? Like, how did you... What have you learned over the years to refill your tanks so that you're able to, you know, go back, so that you were able to go back on Monday and love a Bobby or love a James? You know, I know there were days where we would be acting the fool at home and you'd be like, I deal with them all day. I'm not coming home to deal with them. But you loved us well. And so, like, what have you learned over the years to refill and be able to kind of keep that going?
I think my association with church and going to, you know, going to services most Sundays.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear, whew, pastor must have been in my house this week. But, you know, using that, surrounding myself with people who generally are positive people, people who refill my tank, who give me strokes.
Yeah.
And people that I know I care about, you know. God puts... And most days he's put somebody in my path that gives me a lift, whether it's a stranger at the store or whatever. But if you look around you, you know, situations that happen, generally, the right people are there to hold you up, to lift you up, and I mean, I've had so many situations in my life where people jumped to my aid. Whether it's been you boys, your wives, my siblings and their wives and husband, friends, coworkers. I mean, just endless.
Yeah.
Endless. And, you know, when I have a boo-hoo me day, you know, I think, okay, girl, shape it up. Call somebody.
Yeah.
Talk to somebody. You know.
Yep.
Don't sit here and wallow.
Yep.
It's not necessary.
Yeah.
And doing things for others. I mean, there's, I know we all have these little nigglings. You know, I really should call Judy or Sam, or I should drop so-and-so a note.
Yeah.
And you sort of ignore it way too often. And then something happens, and you go, boy, did I miss an opportunity. And so over the years, I've learned most often when that person's name is brought into my consciousness, is that the right word? I need to act on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might be something to lift me up.
Yeah.
But it also is something to lift them up.
Yeah.
And it becomes an automatic reaction a lot of times. When you've practiced it.
Right.
Because you do have to practice it.
Yeah.
And you have to respond. And I believe that that's God speaking to us.
Right.
You know, this person needs you right now, or you need that person right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And I think that's a good way. And just reaching out.
Yep.
And doing little things for other people. Lots of times when our yellow tent farmer that we get our corn from and other things in the summer, lots of times I'll buy a dozen. Well, I'm not going to eat a dozen ear of corn before they go bad,
right.
But I'll buy a dozen and I'll stop at different people's houses and give them a couple ears, you know.
Yep.
I'm just...
Yeah.
Things like that.
That's fun.
So
you get filled up by giving out.
Yeah, you really do. And I don't know, is that selfish where, you know, I feel good about that, you know.
Hey.
But...
You know, that's yeah.
It's just...
That's good.
It's reaching out. And, you know, you'll read where it says, if you're feeling blue, do something for somebody else. And it will make you feel better.
Yep.
And you don't have to look too far.
Right.
To find somebody who is struggling far worse than yourself.
Yep.
So.
All right. So, I feel like most of the time growing up, you know, you were a WJR, WWJ kind of person, right?
Yeah.
Do you have like a handful of go-to songs that, you know, just make you smile, that you sing along with, that you kind of bop your head with?
Well, of course, you know. The Beach Boys, you know, all of that ilk.
Uh-huh.
The Motown, all the stuff I grew up with.
Yeah.
Some of the country songs, Garth Brooks and, you know, some of those guys that you boys loved. And so it does get in there, you know.
Oh, I know. I listen to this guy named J. Cole now because of Ethan.
Oh, yeah. See?
I'm like,
And then lots of times I'll put on, thank goodness for some of this technology that I finally learned how to use, praise music.
Mm.
I'll put that on and just, you know, and I'll sew or clean. but, you know, it just.
Yep. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And I do like the old hymns, too.
Yeah.
there are ones that, you know, it's not Easter with
without
he is risen.
Yep.
So, you know, but yeah, that would be
okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
This was fun. I was a little nervous.
I know, right? Doesn't take long just to kind of get talking.
Right.
So
probably lasted longer than you needed.
Not at all.
So, but thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna go have lunch now, and
okay.
So thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and guys, until next time, love well, my friends.